Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I am so glad to be joining you today for another interview with an author. This author, as I mentioned on Thursday's episode, is Cole W. Williams, and we are going to talk about a couple of her books, but a focus on today for today's interview is on her newest book called Dr. Brainchild and Radar, A Popcorn Discovery. This is a picture book that tells the slightly fictionalized story of how the microwave was invented. Now, if you've never thought about how the microwave was invented, you're not alone. I never really thought about it, I guess. It just showed up in our house in the 80s sometime, and I've been using a microwave ever since. But it's actually a really interesting story, and it's slightly fictionalized because the inventor of the microwave was American engineer Percy Spencer, who is lauded with inventing it. But rather than Percy Spencer being the main character, Cole wanted to do something a little bit different. And I'm going to let her describe Dr. Brainchild as a character so that you can get to know the character of Dr. Brainchild, as well as Dr. Brainchild's lab assistant, who happens to be a wolf named Radar. She's got interesting stories and great reasoning behind both of the characters, and I want you to hear her tell that story. I love this book. It is, she said, for ages around 6 to 9, but as I said, I didn't know how the microwave was invented, and so I had a lot of fun reading this book, looking at the pictures. It is illustrated by Laura Acosta, just to give her a shout out as well, and I love what she did with the characters and the pictures and what she did with Cole's story to really bring that story to life. This book is so much fun. If you have children of whatever age, but might be wanting to know more about sciencey stuff, and I just like to say sciencey stuff, then this is definitely a good book for them. It's, like I said, ages 6 to 9, so depending on the level of your reader, maybe a little younger if you are reading it with them, maybe a little older if they're, you know, like I said, if they're interested in science and just want to read a great story about how the microwave was invented. I know I've said it before, but this book is so much fun. I really, really liked it. It's obviously it's a picture book, so it doesn't take very long to read, but you still learn a lot from the book. And I learned things that I hadn't known before, and I was fascinated by the process. And I really want Cole to tell you more about it, about the characters, etc. So I'm not going to say too much more here. I'll wrap things up again at the end. And again, I do have copies of this book for giveaways. So if you do have a little scientist in your life and want to give that scientist a copy of this book, you should definitely stay tuned at the end to hear how you can enter to win a copy of Dr. Brainchild and Radar. So let's go ahead and turn now to that interview with Cole W. Williams about the book Dr. Brainchild and Radar, A Popcorn Discovery. Hi, Cole. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I am excited to talk about your new book, Dr. Brainchild and Radar, A Popcorn Discovery. Before we do that, though, I would love for my listeners just to get to know you a little bit. So if you can share a little something about yourself.
Sure. Well, I just want to say thanks for having me. And I love your podcast. I think it's great that you explore a lot of different genres. So I just want to thank you for that real quick. And then about myself, I'm an author from the Twin Cities, I live in St. Paul with my family, and I grew up around here, but originally I'm from rural southwest Minnesota in the farm country. My grandparents still have a farm down there, and it's one of my favorite places to go to. And then I write in children's genres. I write nonfiction and fiction, and I also write in poetry. A lot of my children's books stem from my work in research. Previously, I was a scientist, and so I like to explore science themes and bring them into the children's genre at the middle grade reader or at the picture book level. And then for poetry, I've been writing poetry my whole life, and I like to write about nature themes or family life. And currently I'm having a lot of fun writing and researching haiku.
Oh, fun.
And then I also spend a lot of time on the Mississippi River. I do a lot of work with water conservation, clean water initiatives. So that's kind of what I do in my free time.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. I love that you write science books for a younger audience. And that's what Dr. Brainchild and Radar is. It's science-y stuff. Can you talk a little bit about this book, A Popcorn Discovery?
Yeah, so originally I just got really intrigued by how we've come to this modern society of having so many wonderful inventions and modern technology literally in the palm of our hand. I like to look at things and wonder, where did that originally come from? And, you know, a computer is often a really good example. It was in that movie Hidden Figures. The original computer was a whole room. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, my kids ask me, what's a floppy disk? And so I never even think of it. And then I'm like, you're right. You wouldn't know what a floppy disk is. And so with the microwave, I saw a picture of the original microwave and I was shocked. This thing is massive. And the technology and the ingenuity to go into it, I was intrigued by the historical story of how inventions evolve and what makes them evolve. And so I thought it'd be really fun to do a series of children's books, kind of bridging that gap, like teaching kids, showing them with the juxtaposition of, you know, the modern microwave and the original. And so that was my idea for the book, is do a few books showing them kind of a few different inventions this way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. And so Dr. Brainchild kind of invents the microwave by accident. He's working on, not he, yes. Dr. Brainchild is working on something else. And actually that was my faux pas. And I will say that the English language is difficult with pronouns because Dr. Brainchild is never specified as male or female, which is great.
Yes. Thank you.
And I didn't even mean to say that, but out it came. So actually, can you talk a little bit about writing that way? Was it ever difficult for you because we are such a binary language in terms of pronouns?
Absolutely. And to just touch base on what you first said, the book does follow the historical story of a physicist scientist named Percy Spencer, who did kind of stumble upon discovering the microwave. So the whole book follows his story almost to the T. And then originally, I created Dr. Brainchild to reflect this person in history, and he looked like him. And I added the 1930s and 40s language, and I was trying to research the vibe of a laboratory back then. And I had a mock-up of the character. And usually I take a picture of the character, I tape it to my desk, and I reflect, I talk to it, I reflect on it. And something was just really unsettling to me. And it took me a while to figure it out. And as a writer, I think this is a good skill to have. If something just doesn't feel right, sit on it for a while. And so as I was looking, I'm like, the character is just not what I'm trying to say in this story. I'm a female scientist. I at least want to portray a female voice. And so then I was leaning towards that, and I said, that's not even enough. And so Dr. Brainchild went through multiple iterations, multiple different illustrators sent me what they thought Dr. Brainchild should look like. Finally, with Laura, we came across the idea that Dr. Brainchild should be androgynous. And I rewrote the whole book, taking out you know, the specific pronouns. We made it non-binary, and it was very difficult to do. I've never done that before, but the challenge of writing that way was fantastic. My editor and I said, let's go for it. And we had to work really hard for that flow. We had to, it is difficult. And I think it turned out really well, you know, and it's new. And basically, underlying theme of that is, for me, science is unbiased, or at least it should be, to the best that we can do. And to reflect the unbiased nature of science, I want to offer an audience an unbiased scientific character. I want this person to be approachable by any child, and I want anybody to be able to see themselves in this role. And it's very important for me that no one is excluded in being able to grow up and be whatever they want to be. And I think we have plenty of scientific stories that showcase the male perspective. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I do applaud Percy Spencer, the historical figure, in my book. I do write, you know, at the end, saying this book is modeled after this person. So I do the shout out, but I want to kind of expand on that story and make it available.
I'm going to jump in here so we can take our first break of the podcast, but I really wanted Cole to explain how she went about creating the character of Dr. Brainchild. I love that Dr. Brainchild is not specified as to a gender, that Dr. Brainchild is non-binary. Makes it a little tricky to talk about Dr. Brainchild without using pronouns, but I love that she tackled that process. And you don't feel like it's, you don't feel like you notice it when you read the book. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that, about the non-binariness of Dr. Brainchild when we come back. But first, we do have to take a quick break. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. I am speaking today with author Cole W. Williams about her book, Dr. Brainchild and Radar, A Popcorn Discovery. Let's go ahead and turn back to that conversation. We're still talking about Dr. Brainchild as a character, and then we're going to look a little bit more at Radar and some of the other stuff that went into writing this book. Yeah, and when I first heard about the book and I was told that it, you know, this was the way it was written, I was excited, but I was also wondering, you know, how it would flow. And as I read through it, I didn't feel like I noticed that at all, you know, that there were no pronouns or that it felt clunky in any way. So I want to applaud you for that. I think you did a really good job with writing the story so that that never became an issue. You know, it didn't take you out of the story.
Thank you very much. That is maybe because we did, I think, 4 rounds of editing with this book to try and really get it flowing like it originally would and what we're used to using, he or she. Mm-hmm. And so my editor did a lot of work and got back to me with a lot of suggestions, and she was very creative. And so thank you for that. That was a lot of work.
I bet it was. Dr. Brainchild has a sidekick called Radar. Can you talk a little bit about Radar?
Yes. So Radar was not in the original concept of the book. And while I was doing research, I began to learn that a lot of these technologies that I was interested in happened to come about because of this kind of uptick in research during wartime. And I just think it's very interesting how we benefit as a society and we grow as a society with a lot of inventions and scientific discoveries through a war or at the end of war. And I was trying to figure out how to incorporate that kind of backstory into this book. Not that I needed to, but for some reason I felt like I should. And so I created radar to represent, kind of as a metaphor, this underlying presence in how we make progress sometimes in our modern culture. And what's interesting about radar is that I originally proposed with the illustrator to make him this ominous dark figure in the background with like glowing green eyes and kind of like always in the shadows, but never ever says any words. And Laura said to me, you know, it's a children's book. He should be approachable. He should probably be likable. And so we kind of went back and forth and came up with a happy medium. But Radar, yeah, he's the lab assistant. He is Dr. Brainchild's friend and assistant, and he helps kind of inspire Dr. Brainchild to do his inventions.
Mm-hmm. And I can actually see your original idea in how Radar came out, because Radar is sort of wolfish looking and black in color, and instead of glowing green eyes, he has green glasses. So I can see I can see the compromise in there, but not scary. So that's probably good.
Yes.
And then, what age group do you think responds best to Dr. Brainchild?
So I created, well, let me back up. Before I talk about that, I went to this Minnesota Writers Conference, and I attended a picture book session. And I remember distinctly the speaker saying, writing a picture book will be the hardest thing you ever do, hardest thing you try to write. And I'm like, I'm going to take that challenge. And so I knew right away that I wanted this book to be the classic 32-page, 600-word picture book for early readers. My proclivity is to just write and write and write. And I think I just naturally can write for the middle grade level better. And so it was this whittling down process to get this book down to the 600 words, which is very difficult. And now I completely understand what that speaker was talking about. She's absolutely right, and as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. But it's I would say from the age of 6 to 9, picture book level, and maybe younger or older, depending on the interest of the reader. A common review I get for my books is that, you know, there's a couple 50-cent words in here, and they're kind of difficult for my reader. And as a guardian, I'm like, I totally get that. And I did that on purpose. And, you know, creating a book is this large compromise between yourself as the creator and then editor, proofreader, illustrator. And so I would love to pack it full of like very difficult concepts. And then my editor basically says, okay, pick two words and we'll leave it at that. You have something challenging, but it's always my goal to have a child trip up on a word and then ask their guardian, you know, what is a magnetron? Mm-hmm. What is a protist? Or what's a delicatessen? I wrote that in a different book. And delicatessen was contested by my editor thoroughly. And I said, I just really want to keep it.
Wow. Yeah, that's a hard one to sound out, too.
Yeah, that is a really difficult one. I admit it. But I'm trying to push the reader a little bit to expand and take it a step further and, you know, hopefully go pick up an old dictionary and look things up, look concepts up and research it with your parent or guardian and take it further.
Mm-hmm. As a child who was consistently told, go look it up when I asked what a word meant, I completely understand and appreciate that approach.
So look, you know, I still have the old dictionaries laying around the house, and my kids think they're just really hilarious and funny, but I think they're wonderful teaching tools mm-hmm. for kids still.
Absolutely. And in fact, it was even when we said, how do you spell? My parents would say, go look it up. And I'm like, but I don't know how to spell it. It was a challenge. And I learned.
It's going to be a long time looking through every page of the R's.
Exactly. You have mentioned Laura Acosta, your illustrator, a couple of times. How does that relationship work with you as the author and Laura as the illustrator? When I'm sure you have a vision for how you think everything looks, and then your illustrator, I'm sure, has a vision. How do you work that out?
Well, that's a great question. And overall, the artist-author relationship is by far my favorite part about creating a book. So what I do when I'm self-publishing is I put out a job post, and I typically get 30 to 40 applications worldwide of artists that are interested in illustrating the book. And I spend the time to interview and respond to every single one. And I'm looking for this very specific aesthetic for each book. And with Laura, she was imaginative. She had this, she has a few different styles. I picked one of the styles that I thought was a really great picture book look. And then when I'm interviewing her, I'm kind of getting a feel for, Are we gelling? You know, do we have a great, if I explain something that can be very difficult to explain, is she inquiring and expanding? And I also like to give the artist a lot of room to grow and kind of stretch their legs. And I think it's really wonderful. Sometimes artists, like, they have these very rigid contracts, and I've been told, like, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to just play. And this is where brilliance comes in sometimes. Like, you get to see them, like, in their element, creating. I don't understand that type of art world at all. And so I'm just astonished by what comes out of it. And so I love this relationship. And Laura's fantastic. She would take time to think about things that I was looking for, especially when it came to making Dr. Brainchild androgynous. How can we portray that in a way that's still fun and appropriate for the age group? And so the collar went up. We researched goggles from early laboratories. She added the watches. We brought in a ton of stuff from physics labs, and she made the striped socks. And so she was just really, really fantastic to work with. And I still work with her because now we're doing all the promotional stuff. So it's kind of this, like, long-term relationship.
That's wonderful. I love that. Jumping in here again so that we can take our second break of the podcast. Sounds like Laura and Cole really had a great working relationship, which comes through in the book. I've always been curious about how those types of collaborative relationships work and how one person gets across, in this case, her vision to another person who then takes that and you know, makes it her own, but also keeps that original vision in mind. So I'm really glad that she described that process. We are going to take our second break of the podcast, but stay tuned. When we come back, we'll have the conclusion to my interview with Cole W. Williams. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. We're going to go right into the conclusion to that interview with author Cole W. Williams about her book, Dr. Brainchild and Radar, A Popcorn Discovery. Will there be more Dr. Brainchild and Radar books?
I certainly hope so. I originally developed this concept to do a series, and I'm basically just trying to figure out now what the next book will be. I have already had a lot of inquiries about Radar, And, you know, who is this Radar, and why is this dog or wolf in this story? And I'm thinking, maybe with the second invention, maybe the second book should be about Radar's story, and we can tie those in, and I can help explain somehow who he is. But I definitely want to do at least three, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, fun. I love that. At the end of the book, you mentioned that you explain who Dr. or Percy Spencer is, but you also list a website, www.explainthatstuff.com, and then /how magnetrons work. So is that a website that, well, just talk about the website a little bit.
Sure. That website is, I love that website. That it is a fantastic entry-level tool. Like if you have any question about anything science, math, discovery related, you can go there, and it's basically a collection of articles, but they're written in more of a layman's term. So it's approachable, it's interactive, there's really cool diagrams. And I included that into the book because I think that's a great place to go if you just want to start learning about something. And you can put in anything from gears to magnetism to water pollution. They have a lot of different stuff on there. When I was doing research for the book, I was literally reading the original patents to the microwave and the magnetron and vacuum tubes. And I'm like, this is too in-depth. So I had to find something. You know, a nice first approachable website to go to.
Let's talk a little bit about some of your other books. You mentioned before that you write fiction and nonfiction. You do poetry. So just take one or two of your other books and talk about those a little bit.
Okay. Well, my first book is titled Eukarya, and that's another science book, middle grade reader. That was an introduction to taxonomy, which is the science of classifying organisms. That was just my introductory book, figuring out how to make a book. And the illustrator for that was Ian Durning from the UK. And then I did a fiction book titled Charlie. This is a book about grief for children. And I love Charlie. Ian did the pictures for that too. He loves Charlie. We started referring to Charlie as like his own person involved in the creation of the book, like three people in the room. And that one was a story that I created as a tool. So whenever I write, this might be going overboard, but whenever I write, I employ a rhetorical device I learned in college. It's Cicero's The Aim of the Orator. And Cicero says you should aim to teach, to delight, and to move. And above all of these three, it should be to teach. And so whenever I write a book, I try to move the reader in an inspiring way. I try to delight, and I try to teach. And so anything I write, like at the end of Charlie, I have a resource section that was written by a therapist on how to approach the topic of grief for children. And she, Michelle Abbott, wrote this wonderful section on steps you can take and ideas that you can use to have a start that conversation with a child. And, you know, if I don't have that tool, I will find that person to bring in onto the project. And she did a fantastic job and taught me a lot. She's like, you know, Cole, it's not always a verbal invitation to the conversation. Sometimes it's through artwork or music. And I'm like, I already know that it's so fantastic you're here. Thank you so much. And that makes the book kind of multifaceted. So
yeah, thank you.
I was just going to say, and then I have a poetry collection, which is, you know, speaks to my Hear the River Dammed. It speaks to my water work and clean water stuff I do and my little adventures on the Mississippi River. And the same thing. That's kind of a bio. And then the poetry is to delight. And then I have a teaching section. Here are steps to get involved with working on your local water. If you've never done anything in a conservational realm, here's how you can get started.
Okay, thank you. So you mentioned that you you are a scientist. What inspired you then to start writing both fiction and nonfiction?
Well, I was a scientist. I actually quit working in labs so publishing academically is its own kind of world. And we were getting papers out there on our research, but I kept in my head, like, creating these stories about what I was learning in the lab. And I'd try them on people and I'd want to share them. And I'm like, you know, I just really would love to, like, share how the beauty and the story of this science with an audience. And so, with the support of my husband, I took time off to explore that and to start creating stories. I love the idea of making science accessible and getting children excited about something maybe they've never thought of before. And so that was the original idea, is just to quit working in science and start taking this art world and melding it with my science world and see what we get.
Nice. I love that because it really makes it approachable. And you get, I just love that you were inspired to tell your story so that it was accessible for, I mean, even all ages, because I didn't know what the first microwave looked like or how it was invented. So I definitely learned something from the book.
Is that cool? It's like, you know, 750 pounds. It's like the size of a car.
Yes. Not something that everyone's going to have in their kitchen.
Right. Like, imagine going out to your car to cook some food.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And so I was just going to expand on that with, you know, more funny jokes. But basically, sometimes people have this kind of negative, they like kind of stand back away from science. It's too difficult, or it's not for me. My brain doesn't work that way. And I want to, you know, bring them back into the fold and say, science isn't that scary. It's just the way you're approaching it. There's wonderful stories there.
Yeah.
And if I can just figure out the words, maybe I can. And there's adults that read my science kids books that are like, thank you. I finally, you know, get that. Which is awesome.
What's next? Are you working on another book at the moment, or are you planning more? I know you said there's hopefully three in this series, but what are you working on right now?
Well, this year I challenged myself. I always work in challenges. I challenged myself to write my first novel, and now I'm on the second novel. And my partner for this book is Stephen King's On Writing. He kind of is teaching me how to work with a longer manuscript. And his advice is to write it, get it out, put it in a drawer, and don't look at it for 4 months. And so I did that. And then you're supposed to, you know, unearth this thing and decide if it's worth pursuing. And I am totally out of my wheelhouse. I have no idea. So writing novels, I'm not sure if I will develop them concurrently. I will be releasing another book titled On Holiday Road. And this is a fictional story. It's a really quick page turner. There's kind of like old school Velveteen Rabbit vignettes. They're not full illustrations. They're kind of pen drawings interspersed throughout the book. It's a whimsical, nostalgic story about going back on a drive with your parents. I don't know when you were little, did your parents always make you go on this like Sunday drive for hours and hours?
Not Sundays, but we definitely went on drives that were, to me, boring. But not, I mean, looking back, we went very interesting places.
Yeah, this story is kind of about that. Like, I don't do that with my kids. They would think it was the most boring thing ever, but they were boring. But I also remember a lot of imagination coming in during those times of sitting in the back seat. So On Holiday Road is about that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also developing some classes at a place called Creator Space, and it's downtown St. Paul. And I'm starting some book clubs and writing classes and all sorts of stuff there. So lots going on.
Yeah, it sounds
per
like
usual.
Yeah. You definitely stay busy.
Yes.
I love that you wrote that you challenged yourself to a picture book of 600 words, and then you challenged yourself to a novel. So you don't shy away from either end.
Well, I took a poetry class at the Iowa Writers Workshop festival over the summer. They do the writing classes, and I took a poetry class, And I told my teacher that, and she's like, why do you do this to yourself? I'm like, I don't know. I love trying different things and seeing how they work out. And I don't, the novel thing might not be my thing, but at least I tried it.
Yeah, absolutely. Good for you. When you have time to read, what are your favorite, do you have favorite authors or genres?
Yeah, so I read voraciously. I try to read every day. And I can't say that I have a favorite author per se. I have favorite genres for sure. So maybe the best way to answer that question is, how is my little personal library set up? So I prefer to buy every book in print, which my husband thinks is a little ridiculous, but I write in my books and I am actively having a conversation with the author. And so I have every book that I've ever read, and it's the only thing that I've moved from house to house my whole life. So I have literally every book I've ever read. But so I have a shelf for banned books. I like to collect banned books based off of the ALA annual list of most challenged and banned titles. I also collect science books, and I like old science books, kind of like improper theories before they evolved. And then I have current science books. I also like to collect classics. And so I have, you know, Homer, Iliad, the Aeneid, books like that. That's inspired by my children that go to a classical school. And then the way I kind of approach reading in general is to, actually, I started this thing this year where I go into a bookstore and I pick something randomly off the shelf and read it. Because I think it's really important to read outside of your genre. And it's like, how do you do that? And so I like to experiment always and try and read as many different things as I can. And so I also review books for book tasters. And that's another way for me to kind of infuse new genres that I wouldn't gravitate towards. So for me, writing or reading fiction or contemporary fiction, sci-fi, romance, I would never just, go search for those. But now that I have these facets where they can come to me, it's fantastic to kind of read outside of my genres. And then I read poetry constantly. I review poetry. And then I always try to infuse kind of like a local author mix into my book reading. So supporting local authors, helping them out, showing up, and making sure that I'm, giving back to the people that show up for my stuff.
Nice.
So basically a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, you are a total book nerd, and I think I love you a little bit.
I am. I am. And I'm like super obsessed with, the original first print edition for like $600. And I'm like, can I have that for my birthday? And the answer is usually like, are you kidding me?
Right. Do you have a dedicated library space in your house?
Yes. I have this shelf going all the way around the top of the office room, and they're very safe. So I might be a little obsessive about the books. They're very safely tucked by the ceiling and nobody can touch them. And my son, he's always in there reaching for a book. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I will know. Like, you just checked out The Godfather. I need to see that in my hand before you go in this room. So he's all over the books. But yeah, they just keep coming. I have piles everywhere.
Yeah, I love that. Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Advice? I have. So this is kind of like my work at Creator Space. And I have a lot of advice, but what I would say to people who want to start writing or are in the beginning phases of writing, this is the kind of what I've developed. There's this business world of writing, right? And this is a very powerful force. And sometimes it overshadows this creative world on the other side of the spectrum. And I think it's really important for new writers to be able to start identifying that difference. Like, even say to yourself, I am engaging the business side of writing, or I'm engaging the creative side of writing. And the difference is the creative side is sacred. You should not have the business side speaking to this creative side. And so protect it. And, you know, have that become first most times. The business stuff can come later. But that creation time and exploration is so beautiful. And I feel like when people, sometimes I run into people who want to start writing again, they say, I used to write and then I was critiqued and then I quit. And I cringe because it happens a lot with writing. And I don't know if it happens with other art forms as much. Maybe I'd love to hear about it, but with writing, it happens all the time. And I think that is a travesty because, you know, people, we need stories. We need to be relating to each other and we need everybody's voice to do that. And so we need kind of like all hands on deck. And when people say they quit, I'm like, you have to get back in there. And it's not about the awards or the numbers necessarily. Like I said, that stuff can come later, but it's about what you have to do to make a community and bridge gaps. And so don't quit and, you know, protect that time, try and make it regular.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that. I know you have a website, so let people know what your website is and also where they can find you on social media.
Oh, thank you for including that. My website is my name. It's ColeWWilliams.com. I added that W because there is a pop star, Cole Williams. That's not me.
Okay.
And then I have, you know, the usual, I have a Facebook author page, a Twitter account, and an Instagram account. I update all of them, mostly my website for events, local events and whatnot, and then the social media stuff. I share books I read and stuff I'm doing, and so come join me in the conversation.
Okay, thank you. Well, that covers my list of questions. Is there anything that we haven't talked about in terms of writing or your books or anything we haven't covered that you would like to speak about?
I just like to say, you know, all of my writing comes from the heart, and I hope that it resonates with readers, and I'm always learning and working on honing my craft and expanding. And so I'm thrilled to share my perspectives through writing in this way. And just want to say thanks for the support from all my readers and for people who've given any of my books a go.
Great. Thank you. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your weekend to talk to me. I loved the book and I'm looking forward to hopefully more Dr. Brainchild and Radar books.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, you saved... it was a wonderful rain shower earlier and a great time to be inside with coffee. So thanks for talking. I had a great time.
Great. Me too. Thank you so much. Once again, thank you so much to my guest, author Cole W. Williams, for joining me to talk about not only Dr. Brainchild and Radar, but a few of her other books and some things that she's been working on. I really appreciate her taking the time, as I said. I appreciate you, my listeners, as well. I wouldn't be here without you and your love of books. So as part of that love, I'm full of love today. I just randomly declared my love for Cole as well because she's a book nerd and I want to go live in her library. That's creepy, right? Just going and living in someone's library. Okay, don't worry, Cole. I'm not stalking you. I won't go live in your library. Readers, I love you. I'm not going to stalk you either, but I do want to give you books. So I do have some copies of Dr. Brainchild and Radar to give away. It's very simple. All you have to do is go onto our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and comment on this post. This is episode 105, interview with Cole W. Williams. Just comment on that post on either Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and you will automatically be entered to win a copy of this wonderful book. Pretty simple, right? So get out there and go get yourself a science picture book because it's awesome and you need it in your life. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope that you will join me again on Thursday when I will be talking about squash. Nope, I'll talk about books. I hope you will join me and I hope you're having a wonderful week so far. Now go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.